Welcome to the PureMed Podcast Special Series, Behind Diagnoses Patients. My name is Leah Sarapier, and I am your host. Behind Diagnoses Patients aims to uplift patient voices, to share their insight and experiences navigating the healthcare system. It welcomes everyone from patient advocates, the chronically ill, the disabled, and those with rare diseases to offer suggestions for a more equitable world. On this episode, I'm pleased to welcome Lilith Furey, our guest speaker who is diagnosed with lipedema. As Latin, Indigenous, queer, and disabled, she has made it her mission to help provide representation to those who otherwise go unacknowledged. She says her goal is to bring body positivity to the world of horror. Hello and welcome. From the bottom of our hearts and from all of us at the Peer Medical Foundation, thank you, Lilith, for accepting to appear as a guest speaker for the Behind Diagnosis Patients podcast special series. On the platform and together with incredible individuals such as yourself, we aim to uplift patient voices, to share their insight and experiences navigating the healthcare system. To provide a little context, the PureMed podcast is an initiative of the Peer Medical Foundation that was formed at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now with 20 plus episodes produced, many more in production, and with listeners across the globe, these conversations with activists, changemakers, and underground grassroots organizations has served as a platform invigorating the desire within us all to do better. Better for patients, people, and humanity. Without further ado, let's dive into the conversation. As a physician in training and health professional, I've seen how essential communication is for the effective delivery of healthcare. It is perhaps one of the most powerful tools in a clinician's arsenal. Unfortunately, there is often a mismatch between a clinician's level of communication and a patient's level of comprehension. And in fact, evidence shows that patients often misinterpret or do not understand medical information given to them by clinicians, while consequently, physicians and health professionals often dismiss, neglect, and pass hurtful remarks that often violate their ethical conduct. This goes against the values of the profession, as highlighted by the Hippocratic Oath, a declaration I myself was sworn to care for my patients with the highest level of care and compassion. Now, I'm sure you can understand and even see that this lack of understanding can lead to medication errors, missed appointments, adverse medical outcomes, and even malpractice lawsuits that can harm both the patient and the provider. Conversely, our healthcare systems are flawed. These past years alone, we've seen health disparities exacerbated with the refugees, the incarcerated, BIPOC patients, the elderly, LGBTQ+, and youth, and even more when intersectionality is involved. These issues and more highlight the numerous human rights violations of which access to healthcare is one of the most outrageous. Today, Lilith, we are here for you to tell your story in a way that communicates the good and the bad of our healthcare system, your concerns and suggestions for a more equitable world. So I'd like for you to take it away and tell us your story about yourself and what inspired you to become a powerful patient advocate.
Well, for me, it started when I first, I have thalassemia, anemia. It's a condition that you're born with. And one of the treatments is blood transfusions. The leading cause of death for people with thalassemia is liver failure or liver disease. So you would think that if somebody starts developing symptoms of something being wrong with their liver, that a doctor would notice and a doctor would care. I mean, given that it's the number one cause of death. And yet, when I started to develop those symptoms, they weren't noticed, they weren't addressed, and I wasn't given proper medical testing for it. Instead, because my then undiagnosed lipedema was causing weight gain, every single symptom that I had was dismissed for, oh, you need to just exercise more and you need to eat less. And at the time that I was gaining a lot of weight, I was also anorexic. And I ended up admitting to my doctors just how much I ate and just how much I exercised. I wanted them to know that, like, look, something is wrong. I'm barely eating. I'm exercising way too much, but I'm still gaining weight. So the lack of, you know, it's not my diet and exercise that's causing these problems. I don't know if it's connected or if it's separate, but there's something going on. Mm-hmm. And my doctors dismissed me as either being incredibly stupid or lying. They said, well, sometimes people don't realize just how much they eat and they tend to underestimate it. And then they don't really, when you exercise, it's unpleasant. So sometimes people just exaggerate how much they're doing it and they don't mean to. And I remember telling them, I said, look, I provided you all of my information. I gave you my diet journals and my exercise journals. And do you really think that someone who is going to count 15 calories in their toothpaste, or the fact that a chewable Tums has one carbohydrate, is really going to somehow miss an additional 4,000 calories in their diet? That in order for me to be able to have so much detail and know that not all diet drinks are diet and know all this other stuff about their intake is somehow going to inadvertently and unknowingly consume an extra 4,000 or 5,000 calories in order to make your whole calorie in, calorie out rule make sense, that doesn't make sense. And I even showed my pedometer, and they try telling me, well, people can fake those just by, you know, moving and doing this and then all this other stuff. And it was clear that they had absolutely no interest in anything other than just to tell me, exercise more, eat less. Meanwhile, I was getting sicker and sicker, and doctors in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in West Virginia, around the Weirton area, doctors in Virginia, and even doctors in North Carolina, it was like along the Virginia North Carolina border. Mm-hmm. All of them missed and were not able to diagnose the fact that my treatment for my thalassemia was causing me to end up developing the number one freaking cause of death for people with thalassemia. Instead, every single one of them focused on the weight gain. And still, none of them even thought about lipedema. I didn't even get my lipedema diagnosis until about a year ago. And this was all happening in 2014. 2013, 2014. And it wasn't until 2016 that all of a sudden I had one doctor in a hospital in Pittsburgh. It was actually not a regular hospital. It was one of the little medical center places off in about Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And then they said, well, according to this, this, and this, you know, I think that there's something severely wrong with your liver. We're going to have to bring you in for all, we're going to have to do a lot more testing. I'm sorry, you know, you're going to have to stay a little bit longer. And I'm like, yeah, I will stay as long as you need, as long as you can tell me what's wrong. And then they ended up letting me know that I had developed cirrhosis of the liver. If it had been noticed earlier, I wouldn't have cirrhosis of the liver. The thing is with cirrhosis, cirrhosis is incurable. You can only get a liver transplant. It has to be a whole transplant. You can no longer take partial transplants or anything like that. You need the whole dang liver. And if it had been caught earlier, I would have been able to get chetalation. I would have been able to get enough help so that my liver would be fine. They would have caught it when it was still just hemochromatosis. And that is something simple. That's just a simple blood test and them looking at how much iron is in the blood. Mm-hmm. Because when you get blood transfusions, you get your liver filters the iron. Because you don't just take it out of your body. All the iron that goes in your body stays. And all that iron buildup causes too much iron in the blood, and that's called hemochromatosis, and that's what can cause the scarring of the livers and all that other stuff. All of this could have been recognized, but it wasn't. And because of my lipedema, which is a connective tissue disorder where your lymphatic fluid ends up going into the wrong parts of your body and corrupting fat cells and actually changing their cellular structure and creating firm fibrotic nodules that are non-metabolic. So you can't lose weight with diet or exercise. Just once that stuff is in your cell just will start to grow. And you're just going to get fat no matter what the hell you do. Doesn't matter what you eat. Doesn't matter what you exercise. You're going to gain weight. And you can't lose that weight. So because I had the lipedema and I ended up getting fat, that also makes it so that I cannot get treatment for my liver. If I need a liver transplant, I'm not considered worthy. So not only did the medical structure and systemic fat phobia and weight stigma cause me to end up developing cirrhosis of the liver just because they couldn't treat me like a normal human being. But then the same system says, well, yeah, I know that we gave you this condition. We'll never admit it, but I know that we gave you this condition, but now we're not even going to allow you to fix it because we don't think your life is worth saving. Because if someone is fat, then they're not seen as being healthy enough or worthy enough or deserving enough to get a liver. And the fact that I'm still around and I'm still kicking, I'm a hell of a lot healthier than most people would be at this stage and after this many years is proof that obviously being fat isn't this great, big, horrible, scary thing that everyone wants to make it out to be. Because I had a lot of friends that I met at dialysis that were at the same point as me. And a lot of them are not around anymore, but I still am. And I'm still relatively healthy. I'm healthy enough that I was just able to get my first surgery done for lipedema, where they removed all lipedema nodules in my abdomen. And when they went in to do the manual extraction, they realized that I didn't actually have any real fat left in my abdomen. So they removed all of it. And yet I'm healing slower than most people, obviously, because I have a damaged immune system. But I was still able to do that and I'm alive and kicking. So I'm pretty sure I'd also be able to handle any other surgeries that I need. But in order for me to be able to even qualify for a new liver, I would need to go through several more surgeries for lipedema that would remove the diseased tissues that I have, the fibrotic nodules of lipedema, which in turn, as a side effect, would cause me to lose weight, because you cannot lose weight with diet or exercise with lipedema. You have to literally remove the lipedema nodules. You remove enough of them, you lose weight, you become thin or thin enough that the medical system suddenly sees you as human, and then you can get a liver. So the fact that I have to pay out of pocket to take care of the lipedema first in order to be able to get a liver is absolutely devastating and cruel and dehumanizing. But the fact that it isn't, that lipedema surgery isn't covered by most insurances anyway, is also incredibly dehumanizing, because it's not the patient's fault. They can't control the fact that they gained weight or the fact that they're fat, I think. And the thing is, most doctors don't even know about it. Now, when you tell someone that you're allergic to penicillin, people are like, well, yeah, that's a given. But only 10% of people are allergic to penicillin. If someone says they have breast cancer, that's 10% of women. And yet no one's going, oh, I haven't heard of that. I can't imagine those symptoms. Now, what is it again? You have a lump, or you have something that appears to be a rash in the case of IBC. And no, it's something that is looked for. But with lipedema, lipedema is in 11% of women. That's 1% higher than it is when it comes to breast cancer. And yet almost hardly any doctors can actually recognize it. And the few who have even heard of lipedema, many of them believe that it is only in the legs. And lipedema nodules have been found in legs, in the stomach, in the abdomen, in the buttocks, in the breasts in people. It's been found in the upper arm. Some people can develop it all over their entire bodies. And some people can have a really advanced stage, but only have like moderate weight gain and just be chubby. And some people can end up, you know, several hundred pounds, completely debilitated and unable to move, and experience no pain, but just the weight gain. In my case, you could very clearly see and feel the nodules. I'd even gotten injured at one point, and one of the little nodules had popped out. And I remember thinking, like, what the hell is that? And my sister, who's in the car with me, driving me to the hospital after I cut my leg open, was like, oh, my God, I see tendons. And she's freaking out. She has a hypochondria, and she has a panic disorder anyway. So seeing something literally pop out of me, you know, terrified her. But it was a lipedema nodule. But we didn't know that then. And this was when I was still relatively thin. So it wasn't really something that was thought about or even addressed or understood by doctor. Doctor was like, oh, I don't know, you probably just maybe had like a fluid sac burst or something. You just imagined it. And it's like, no, it's in the car somewhere. Like, we could try and find it. And they're like, oh, no. And with lipedema, it's like I had all the symptoms. You could feel them. You could see them. I have the hypermobility. I can dislocate pretty much every part of my body. I had the extreme pain and sensitivity to touch. I had the lack of appetite. I don't feel hunger. A few people who I know who have had the first surgery that I've had told me, like, yeah, after you get that, it's amazing. You suddenly feel hungry for the first time. And I was thinking, God, will I even know how to recognize it? Will I know how to do this? You know, and no. It didn't work for me. I still don't feel hunger. There's you get like very low amount of body hair sometimes. Sometimes it can affect your menstrual cycle. It's been misdiagnosed as fibromyalgia, as Cushing's disease, as Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Sometimes you can actually have those conditions and lipedema at the same time, but you don't have to actually have both. But there are so many different diseases that are misdiagnosed as it. And sometimes doctors will just say, oh, you have obesity. And even by medical definition, it's not the same thing, because with obesity is someone who gained weight through overconsumption of food and hardly any exercise. And to be honest, obesity isn't even a freaking condition. And it shouldn't be even classified as one. But if they want to go and classify people with lipedema as that, then they should at least follow their own rules, because, you know, many of us don't eat that much and are active and yet still gained anyway. And the fact that we have this condition that is beyond our control, that debilitates our lives, and yet treatment for it is seen as being elective surgery and cosmetic surgery. And it's like, oh, that's just something to make you look skinny and be pretty and tee-hee-hee. What is that? It's like, no, it's basic needs. It's basic health care. It's something that should be a human right. And yet, because it involves weight, the insurance companies and doctors and everyone else would rather either blame the patient, even though science is like, no, it's not the patient's fault, and treat it as though it is purely cosmetic, even though science also says, no, it's not cosmetic. That's just one of many, many side effects. It's just, it doesn't matter to them enough. So all these people who have lipedema, so many of them don't even realize that they have it. It's like, whenever I talk about lipedema, I always get people going, wait a minute, do you think it's this? Do you think it's that? Or I need to talk to my doctor. Oh my gosh, this explains so much. And just the lack of awareness about it at all is incredibly, incredibly depressing. And you combine the fact that I have to somehow jump through hoops to get this treated, this impossible thing treated, where even getting my first surgery was about $25,000 in cash. And there's about 8 surgeries more that I have to take care of before I can even get on the list for a liver. It's just, this is how the system is set up to harm fat people.
I commend you.
If they had just treated me as a person to begin with, I would not even have cirrhosis in the liver. If lipedema was treated as any other serious medical condition, which it is, then I wouldn't have to worry about constant pain. I would not have had so much of my life taken away because of it. And it would have been recognized long, long, long time ago. Actually, it more than likely would have been noticed while I was still going through puberty, because I had all the symptoms then. It's just because I was thin, it wasn't really that well noticed, but my legs were always wider than other girls, and I had the flexibility and I had the sensitivity to touch, and I had all that, and you could still feel the nodules. And even I remember when I started, you know, developing breasts, I had lipedema there too. And people were like, oh, this is how you do a self breast exam. You have to feel for lumps. And I'm like, but my whole body feels like lumps. That should have been a red flag if people were educated and doctors knew about it. But instead, they're like, oh, no, you just don't know how to do it well enough. You're just imagining lumps. You have to, like, feel around and do this. And I'm like, well, you can feel. And they're like, you need to learn how to do it on yourself. And all that stuff for years and years and years. And it's like the entire system is based in a way to try and get rid of us. Like, it doesn't want to help anyone that it doesn't deem worthy. It wants us to get sicker so that we'll just die and be out of the way, and then they won't have to look at another fat person again. It really feels like they're just trying to speed up our deaths and get rid of us. Because how else would it make sense, the fact that when it comes to us, they can do what anybody else under any other weight class, it would be seen as medical discrimination. It would be seen as malpractice. But when we're involved, it's, well, it's understandable. Well, of course your doctor thought that because of this. And because of that, and because of all this other stuff, it is excused over and over and over again. That would not be allowed in any other circumstance. That would be seen for what it is. And that's my story.
Thank you so much.
One more thing.
Yes.
Sorry. Another thing is, I can't believe I just forgot. When it comes to getting health insurance, and even if you want to get protection benefits, like life insurance to protect your family before you go into surgery, I didn't qualify for life insurance because of my weight. I would have had to lose 270 pounds in order to just barely qualify for life insurance.
That's outrageous. That is really outrageous. I really commend you, and I thank you so much, Lou, for sharing your story, for going into this much detail, for being so vulnerable. But I have a few questions for you, four more that I want your opinion, and I think it will be extremely valuable. So the first one is, what matters to you? What matters to you when interacting with health professionals or undergoing invasive examinations? What will they do that will show you that there's humanism in medicine again?
For them to actually listen and to acknowledge a lot of medical professionals, you can tell them a symptom and so many of them will just dismiss you as imagining things, as not knowing what you're talking about, straight up calling you a liar, etc. So actually listening and treating us with respect as though we're not all lying and incompetent, that would be an incredible, incredible step in the right direction. Also listening to us and believing us when we say, ow, that freaking hurts. I've been in so many positions where they are actively hurting me and I'm in pain and I have an abnormally high pain threshold. And they'll be like, oh, it's not that bad, or calm down, or it's not this, it's not that. And just completely gaslighting me in the process. And then if anything does go wrong, it's, oh, well, you should have spoken up and, you know, let us know. And it's like, dude, I was telling you it was hurting. You should have believed me. Also, not being so rough. That kind of goes hand in hand with the last one. I noticed that as I began to gain weight, the way that doctors treated me was getting progressively worse and worse and worse. And I realized that once I got fat, I was being treated as though I couldn't feel, as though I was somehow less sensitive than others. They started being rougher with me. They, like, rather than, you know, gently grab the arm, you know, and hold it in position, or move the leg, or move this or move that. It's like I was being snatched at. I was being yanked. I ended up getting so much damage to my veins just from simple things like blood, like blood transfusions or blood tests or anything like that, that now it's almost impossible for any doctor to find any vein on me because my veins are just, they're just so damaged. They, you can barely find them anymore. That's long-term permanent damage. And it's just from roughness. It's like, oops, we accidentally went too far in the one vein that we did find, or we accidentally did this, we accidentally did that. And I'll come back just from something like a simple blood test and I'll have bruises on my forearm, on my wrist, on the top of my hand, on the top of my foot, on my thigh, on every single location that they tried to take blood but couldn't and messed up until they finally managed to get the right place. And that never happened before. And now it's like, it's a given. And it's like, now I have panic attacks just at the thought of, you know, it's like, as soon as it's like, okay, I have a doctor's appointment, and I start crying and I start hyperventilating. And it's like, because I know just how horrible every single visit is going to be because of just the lack of care and patience and just the way that treatment is done. So I think that one thing that doctors could really do is just learn to listen to us, learn to believe us, realize, you know, that we do experience pain, take our pain seriously, and just try not to hurt us. I mean, that's a very basic thing. Just treat us like humans. Treat us like you would your own mother or sister or child. You know, don't see us as some other, some weird thing, some gross thing that you just don't like and don't want to deal with.
Absolutely. And well, my second question for you is, how can patients ensure that they receive better health care wherever they are and that they feel heard, respected, and understood?
One thing that I learned, and I've seen a lot of other people repeating it too, so it seems a lot of other people kind of caught on and learned, is if something is wrong and you are being dismissed or not treated in the way that would get you a diagnosis for anything, make sure that you have that doctor write it down on your freaking chart that they are refusing to give you tests. If you're coming in there because your leg hurts and you think it's broken and they're telling you, no, you just need to lose weight, you're like, okay, I want you to write there that you are not giving me an x-ray because you want me to lose weight. Go on, tell them that you don't think I have a broken leg. And they don't want to do that because they don't want you to go to another doctor and it turns out, oops, they're wrong. You do have a broken leg. And then they get sued. So they end up giving you the test and it's like, oops, x-ray says that you have no bones in your leg or something. Basically, you have to put them in a position where they have to acknowledge what it is exactly that they're doing to you. And they know that what they are doing is wrong and that what they are doing is just lazy medicine, that you can't just assume everything can be fixed magically by diet or exercise. I have talked to literally hundreds of women who had cancer go undiagnosed because of their weight and just being told to diet or exercise. Most recently was an online influencer. She goes by Manda Paints. She had colon cancer and her doctor had just given her just told her a fat joke and told her that, you know, maybe losing weight would be a good thing and all that kind of stuff and did not give her proper tests. She ended up getting proper tests. I think it was like a month later or something. And it turned out she had colon cancer and she had to fight it for about a year and she's finally better now. But that's a serious thing. And I've talked to, I've heard from and talked to some of at least 1,000 women and NBs and genderqueers and everyone who told me that they had other conditions aside from cancer that had gone undiagnosed because their doctors refused to give them basic testing. And I've also read about several cases as well, too. Like there was one woman, she told me that she had like lung cancer. There was one woman that told me she was having kidney failure and she was being told that she needed to hit the gym and maybe diet more. There was a case I read about where somebody had they had scoliosis, and they were told that their back hurt because they had obesity pain. That's not even a thing. And just all these different problems that are really easily and truly able to be diagnosed, but aren't. Mm-hmm. And all it would take in a lot of these situations to be like, okay, you're telling me that my back hurts because of obesity pain. I want you to write there that, you know, that you are not giving me an x-ray, that you did not give me a physical exam where you felt my spine, that you're not doing this and you're not doing that, you know, because then they would have to lie, because if they wanted to continue to not give you those tests, if they would have to just straight up say, oh, well, it's because of this or because of that. And they don't want to do that, because all it would take would just be someone's eye literally looking at her spine and going, wow, that's not supposed to have been like that. And they would have known, hey, she has scoliosis. She has severe scoliosis. I mean, it's visual. You can tell when someone's spine is bent and it's not supposed to be bent. That's really all it takes. It's just speaking up and just being like, okay, you don't want to give me testing. I want you to write that. And because they don't want to end up getting sued, you know, they will give you the test that you need. And so many times that has saved countless lives. And I wish I knew, and I wish I had the courage when I was younger to have spoken up and stood up for myself instead of just, you know, internalizing all the shame that they kept trying to throw my way. I wish that I had just been like, no, I'm a person. You're gonna freaking listen to me. This is what's wrong. Do something. Have you checked my blood? Because I assumed with everything that they did and all the times I got poked that they would at least look at my blood, that it would at least monitor my blood. I didn't think that it was even possible for my doctors to have gone that long and not noticed. It should not have been possible. Anytime I tell anybody, they're like, well, that's really clear medical malpractice, but it's not when someone's fat, because discrimination on the basis of weight is legal in 49 out of 50 states anyway. So even if it came out that they were discriminating against me based on that, it's okay. And they wouldn't be punished. And it's just one of those things. You gotta fight through it and stand up for yourself and just be like, no, you are going to test me. And if you don't want to give me those tests, you're going to write it right there on my chart while I watch. I want to actually see it be written. Mm-hmm.
And Lilith, if there's anything or anyone wanting to share a story and they're too afraid, what would you say to them?
I didn't know just how bad all of this stuff was until I had gotten sick. And I know that a lot of other people that are now vocal about it and telling their stories everywhere had also felt the same way. And the thing is, when more of us start talking about it and start sharing our stories, it becomes obvious just how many of us there are. The system was allowed to last as long as it did because it succeeded in shaming us and making us feel responsible for not speaking up or scared to speak up. And now that we are, that's why people are suddenly listening and caring. So speak up if you can, if you are at that point where you're able to, because you don't know who you might be helping or how many people you might be helping, or even if you might be saving a life. If you're not at that point where you're able to, it's completely understandable. But just know that the more people who speak up, the more people who refuse to be shamed into silence, the more things might actually be able to be fixed.
I definitely agree with you, Lilith. I just want to thank you so much for all that and for your vulnerability. And when patients are truly engaged and advocate for their own health, their voices are sufficiently amplified to clearly communicate their healthcare priorities. And most important, I think, in healthcare and medicine, there needs to be a shift in the design of healthcare practices and systems. The focus of patient advocacy is on maximizing health and wellness, and not just preventing and treating disease. We hope that the Behind Diagnoses Patient Special Series sheds light on the importance of listening to patient voices, and that over time it will increase patient safety, health innovation, and transform care delivery in the clinic and beyond. And with this, Lilith, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming onto the PureMed podcast, for sharing your vulnerability, for telling us your story. I'm sending you a huge embrace, and I thank you so much for providing so much educational, informative material that will go on to shape and direct the way that trainees in medicine are now being taught to bring back that humanism that is often lost just because we see people as diagnoses and not as patients and human beings.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It really means a lot. And I really hope that somebody listening, that it might help them in some way.
Absolutely. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Hashtag Rising Youth, the Government of Canada, Canada Service Corps, and Taking It Global for supporting and funding the project. I'd also like to thank the incredible individuals, voices, and patients who appear on the series and whose stories will guide medical education, clinical practice, and healthcare innovation. Listen in and listen now to the Behind Diagnoses Patient Special Series on the PureMed podcast to ensure change for a better world. Catch us on the next episode in conversation with another incredible patient advocate. And if you need more information, do not hesitate to email us at PureMedFoundation@gmail.com. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe. Stay healthy.